This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
It's frighteningly hot. In some areas of this country, particularly in the great state of Texas and Oklahoma, even in Louisiana, you're getting some of that. When you hit the triple digits, that's all anybody can talk about, keeping cool. And fingers crossed, the grid, especially in Texas, doesn't go down. So people are being told to hands off the chill button, in other words, the thermostat, so that everybody can get through these really, really rough couple of days. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, thanks so much for hanging with us here on this show. If you're a first-timer, well, welcome. We have that virtual red carpet laid out for you. So the missing Titanic submersible, this is the thing that everybody was talking about. The Navy likely detected an implosion sound on Sunday, and they made the Coast Guard aware of that. There were searches. There was the talk about the pings, and the Navy said the pings are probably noises from your vessels and from what's happening naturally in the water. And in the end, it was about debris, not about oxygen running out, how much time is left. It was, in fact, the fact that debris was found, and near that ocean floor, on that ocean floor, signifying that this is the end of that voyage, and it probably was on Sunday. So now the questions still become, why did the people take the voyage in the first place? Because by all accounts, this was not safe to begin with, even though there had been others in the past on this Ocean Gate submersible. So the CEO was one of the people who perished in the Titanic. Likely they all died instantly. If you talk to anyone who knows anything about implosions, that's exactly what the thought is. But what's really crazy is that the implosion and the shipwreck have some eerie similarities to them. If you think about 1912, the shipwreck, ignoring the signs, hitting the iceberg. So the Coast Guard said on Thursday that it imploded near the site of the shipwreck and killed everyone on board, and that's the end of the round-the-clock search. A lot of people were concerned about the sub in the first place. James Cameron, who is the Titanic director and almost an expert in a different sense of this because he was so fascinated by it, had gone and done all kinds of research with all kinds of top researchers on the Titanic and had gone and seen the Titanic, had gone on a dive, etc., done several of those, many of those, in fact. So he was somebody who was being sought out for comment. And he talked about the tragedy and the warnings that went unheeded to take place at the same exact site with all the diving that's going on around the world. He said he thought it was just absolutely astonishing. And the Rear Admiral, John Mauger of the 1st Coast Guard District, said the debris is consistent with the catastrophic loss of the pressure chamber, and that Ocean Gate Expeditions is the company that owns and operated the submersible, the Titan. They said in a statement that, sadly everybody was lost once they were made aware of it. And at least 46 people successfully traveled in a submersible to the Titanic wreck in 2021 and 2022. But questions still were there about the safety, and they were even raised by the former passengers. Right. And as I mentioned, James Cameron had visited the wreck more than 30 times, and he was warned of the dangers of visiting the site because it's a very unforgivable place where it is in the sea, how far down it is. They were in that, tube that you were practically on. They were practically on top of each other. And so it was catastrophic. It imploded. Everybody killed on that, and now it's about cleaning up the floor. I mean, they're going to still do that. They're picking up the pieces. The Coast Guard is searching the seafloor for more clues on the fate to get as much as they can to piece it together. The pieces they found just backed up the story of the implosion, knowing that there's no way that this is a rescue mission, no way at all. And there isn't a time frame for when they're going to call off the debris that they're picking up, that they're trying to just scan that floor and get everything they can with the ROVs, these remotely operated underwater vehicles that are pretty fantastic, where they can scoop things up and pull them up and put them on a crane. And that's how a lot of private exploration happens on deep areas with wrecks, etc., because the depths that you're talking about were 13,000 feet. So they can go as far as they can go, and they don't have to worry about that the safety issue. It's a remote thing that they're controlling ultimately, and that's what found the debris that backed up what happened, you know, here, where you're talking about, again, such a dicey area and how far down. And the debris was 1,600 feet from the Titanic, and the thought was they died instantly. I mean, just, again, died instantly. And this is something, this catastrophic implosion is something that not just here in the U.S. you all were talking about. I mean, we've been dealing with tornadoes. We've been dealing with the weather, like I said, the sweltering heat where people are having heat strokes. A postal worker died in Dallas as a result of it. I had a friend who's a well-known sportscaster in Dallas, and he talked about going out in the middle of the day and playing golf and should have known better, because he felt that effects of that I've talked about before, where you it's like heat poisoning. It's the craziest thing that, boom, it all of a sudden hits you. And so a lot of people are facing that. And there's other things that we're dealing with in this country. But the one thing that everybody was talking about, the common denominator, was, yeah, maybe the weather, but it was about this submersible. And the fact that then you started hearing these stories about, oh, well, it was a little bit risky because there had been some problems before, and what people paid to go down to see the Titanic wreck, and everything in between. All right, speaking of paying for concert tickets is a little bit different. And concert goers were not greeted by fabulous music at Red Rocks Amphitheater in the Denver area. It's a beautiful place. But at least 80 to maybe even 90 were treated for bumps, bruises, and everything else. And some people were hospitalized with more serious injuries, broken bones. What happened? Hail. Hail that was baseball-sized hail in some cases, but definitely golf ball-sized hail that blanketed the venue like it was snow. They got 3 minutes warning from the people at Red Rock saying, hail, a big, huge hailstorm is coming through, so the concert kept getting delayed. The concert never went off. It was Lewis Tomlinson, who was one from One Direction, who was doing the concert. So all those cars were damaged, but it's about the people. I mean, imagine the big welts on the back of the legs, on the neck. Some people bopped on the head, diving behind trash cans, trying to flee for cars. It was nightmarish by all accounts. Coming up next, your thoughts as we hit the mailbag.
It's all too obvious. We're being distracted by meaningless news headlines. When you dig to find the truth, you discover that the American way of life is being threatened by the institutions we used to trust. It's easy to see the future holds more food shortages, systematic controls, and government overreach. But instead of throwing up their hands, folks are preparing. They're taking steps to be self-reliant and investing in emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, makes it easy to get started and join the ranks with this limited-time offer. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and get their top-selling 4-week emergency food kit. Enjoy tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get new lower pricing this week on these 4-week emergency food kits. Secure at least one food kit for each member of your family. They ship free, too. Those who know what's coming are preparing. Smart folks. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hey guys, why settle for poor quality Powdiarco that's sold by stores and online resellers when you can get Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdiarco Super Tea at DrinkSuperTea.com or 818-965-9113. The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdiarco Super Tea is only available at DrinkSuperTea.com. 818-965-9113. 818-965-9113. That's DrinkSuperTea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
Oh, you have mail, mistress.
Let's dig in the mailbag.
All right, let's dive right in. We start with Craig, who says, Kate, wow. Did any of these people read the fine print? I mean, it's a tragedy, and boy, I do say thoughts and prayers and all that stuff for the families, because the families are the ones that deal with the shocking loss. But you're a billionaire. You have money to spend to go down and see the Titanic. I get it. I kind of do get the lure of wanting to be up close. There is this fascination with it. But now all these things we're hearing about the company and some of the exaggerations of relationships with people like Boeing and partnerships with others that say, no, they weren't, they were just a tad exaggerated, and that there were safety concerns. It really makes you wonder. The idea, I guess, that Stockton Rush, the CEO of OceanGate, had is that he'll tinker with things. It'll be fine. They had other voyages that had problems, but that still ended up okay in the end. And the people that were on board were, you know, more like guinea pigs, I would say. Maybe not even realizing it, because they were more excited by the idea of being there near the Titanic. So just a sad story all the way around. And how about the Navy representing, knowing that they had heard an implosion, immediately telling the Coast Guard, and then it turns out to be a rescue mission. And, of course, everybody talking about how much air was left. I know you were talking about, everybody else was talking about. We were all thinking, oh, if they could just get to them, or they could somehow resurface, even though it's unlikely. And yet there was no chance of that happening at all after finding the debris. When they lost contact on Sunday, that was it. Yeah, you know, and you think about that. You think about the ways that they would have, of all the things they would have on that submersible, the ways to be in touch because of the emergencies, and that, boom, it's just no contact whatsoever. That, it, I mean, imagine that. And so there you go. It was the end of the voyage on Sunday, and now it's piecing it together for more information, I guess, on more specifics of what happened in this catastrophic implosion, the best that they can tell anyway. I mean, the Navy detected an implosion when where the Titan was diving when it lost contact with its mothership. I mean, that's the story. Absolutely. But they're discovering the debris, and that's going to help identify the remains of the Titan after this massive search. So they have these ROVs that they use, and I mentioned that at the top, and that's above the water, and that's what they're, you know, that's what's going to happen now at this point, right? Okay, let's, we got another one of those. Let's go to William, who says, wow, this whole thing on going to see the Titanic and how doomed that voyage was and all these weird similarities 100-plus years later and the folly of the man who created the submersibles, the thinking, okay, we can do this. We can go all the way down 1,300 feet or more and go all over the Titanic, and knowing that other people had certainly had problems in trying to do something similar. Very, very sad, ultimately, what the end of this was, and knowing that the Navy knew that it was an implosion earlier, it could have saved some of the resources, and it could have turned into, let's piece this together, a recovery instead of a rescue, maybe right from the beginning, although I don't know that that would have flown, because they couldn't say for sure. They just believed absolutely that's what it was. And I suppose that's where all the maneuvering comes in. Yeah, making the decisions of, okay, this has disappeared. Do what are we doing? So the Navy says they thought they heard an implosion right there in that area, so we're going to use it as maybe something happened. And then we're hearing this banging, so then people get excited about that, thinking, oh, maybe they're trying to get rescued. And it was none of that whatsoever. So initially what the Navy said was absolutely right. And the fact that people are so interested in this, I think, tells us something. And that's part of the lure of the whole Titanic, right? The folly of, we're going to get to New York as fast as we can on this amazing Titanic and smash into an iceberg and ignore the warnings. And I know a little bit about the Titanic, spending time in Northern Ireland. That's where that Titanic Museum is. And that's also where passengers, I mean, that's where the boat, part of the boat was built, was in Northern Ireland. And I saw all those docks and heard a lot of those stories about getting on the Titanic and whatnot. And wow, it's some of the info and some of what I saw, very, very eerie and fascinating, I think, at the same time. All right, let's move on to Rich. Hi, Kate. I've emailed the show a couple of times, and, you know, here we go again. I'll tell you, the whole Hunter Biden thing, I'm just so sick of it. Let's close the book and move on from him, because I don't believe chasing that rabbit is going to really do anything to help anyone that's looking for any kind of re-election thing. It doesn't matter at this point, although you could say, well, why does he get a pass? But the tax investigation is the thing that is worrisome. And the fact that apparently there were some whistleblowers who were talking about what was happening here and what was this influenced by politics, and that's what one of the whistleblowers said anyway. That, again, is also troublesome, no question about that. And, again, I think that, okay, so if this judge signs off on this plea agreement, what do you do after that? And pursuing it and blowing more tax dollars is, again, the rabbit hole that I wouldn't chase. I wouldn't chase the rabbit down that hole, because it's just more money. It's throwing good money after a bad seed and a bad bitter pill, and let people take it for what it is and make their own decisions on this whole thing. It's just more of the same. You know, it's interesting. They opened the investigation in 2018, and so there were two IRS whistleblowers who said that the Justice Department, the FBI, and the IRS interfered into the investigation into Hunter Biden and said that it seemed to be politics that seemed to be getting in the way. One whistleblower, Gary Shapley Jr., he was the supervisor of the investigation at the IRS, said at every stage of the investigation, every stage, they had the effect of benefiting the subject of the investigation. And he detailed the origins of the investigation in congressional testimony that was unsealed on Thursday. So it's weird. You know, his code name, they had a code name. His code name was for Biden. Hunter Biden was Sportsman. That's not unusual because they, children of presidents, et cetera, get code names. But then you got to think of 2018 and, you know, what was 2018? Biden certainly wasn't the guy. He wasn't the guy that was in the White House then. But testimony released by the committee didn't include any explanation of you know, how some things were linked. But the FBI became aware of that repair shop that had the laptop allegedly belonging to Biden, and that laptop could have contained evidence of a crime. So remember, that whole thing unfolded there. And then you had the repair shop owner who was subpoenaed to testify in Delaware. And, you know, the list goes on now that a lot of this has been opened up. And the thing that I think is interesting is the whistleblowers and what two of the whistleblowers had to say. All right, let's move on to... Let's see here. We got Eddie. I like picking some of you that haven't emailed in a long time. And Eddie kind of says the same thing that he hadn't emailed in a long time. And he really says, hey, Kate, I want to know what you thought of the number one pick in the draft, the French dude who has some serious height and is expected to be a major talent. Hey, for San Antonio, it was a no-brainer, right? Wembanyama is his name, Victor Wembanyama, who... I think it was, they pretty much knew. I guess you never know for sure, but you pretty much believed he was going to be the guy. And if you look in the past for San Antonio, they've had some big men in the past. David Robinson, Tim Duncan, they had Hall of Fame careers, championship rings, and really great, great runs. He's not a prototypical center, but he's pretty dominant on the defensive side. Great, great dribbler and point guard and whatnot. We'll see. Making that leap will be interesting for sure. Stay with us.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA News Update. The Coast Guard has confirmed that five people have died in the Titan submersible that has been missing below the sea since Sunday. Coast Guard Rear Admiral John Mauger says a robotic sub found parts of the missing Titan 1,600 feet from the bow of the Titanic.
With experts from within the Unified Command, the debris is consistent with the catastrophic loss of the pressure chamber.
Nearly 100 people are injured after being pounded with golf ball-sized hail at an outdoor concert in Colorado. Seven people were taken to area hospitals with broken bones and lacerations. 80 others were treated on the scene. Tonight is the NBA draft. The league's future stars are being selected at Barclays Center in Brooklyn. French phenom Victor Wembanyama is expected to go first overall to San Antonio. Dave Collins, USA News.
Eating, working, living pain-free. These are things many of us take for granted. But for many adults with disabilities who are elderly or have serious medical issues, dental care is simply unaffordable. Dental Lifeline Network is looking for dentists who can change this. DLN is asking dentists and their teams to volunteer to just see one of the many patients in need. You can literally change a life. When you volunteer with DLN's donated dental services program to C1, you treat a pre-qualified patient in your office at your convenience. We handle the details so you can focus on the care. Lack of dental care can lead to the inability to have life-saving surgery, eat, or contribute to our community. If you are a dentist or know a dentist, please share this message. Will you see one? Visit willyouseeone.org to help change one life in your community today.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
Well, I'm thrilled to be joined by Natasha E. Stafford Cotton. I want you to get that name right because she has a sensational book. I mean, look at this book, Keep Your Kleenex, From Diagnosis to Deliverance. We had such a fascinating off-air conversation. I have to tell you, Natasha, when I left our conversation, I'm going to let everyone in on this, and this is why they need this book. I was so pumped up and so positive. And immediately I made a list of all the people who are going to get your book, like, okay, I got to go here, I got to go there, I got to go there. And I think that's part of the idea. So it's about your journey, and it's what other people can do when they're in a similar situation, or even if they're not in that situation, who knows if they fall into it. There's so many lessons that you teach us in the book. So what made you write the book?
Okay, so first of all, thank you for having me. You're right. I think we talked like best friends. So you know what? I didn't plan on writing a book. It kind of wrote itself. You know, I started out taking journal notes. So I'm a writer, and there was so much information being spit at me, you know, terms and, you know, follow-ups. And then in between that, I would just sprinkle in a thought or two, my own deep fears, maybe a quick prayer or two. But what really happened was over this course, so it's been 10 years since the diagnosis, I would let people in on maybe a little bit. It could be friends and they would be crying and saying they're going through something. I would say, hey, let me tell you what I'm dealing with. I know what you're talking about. And I would share a little bit and they go, oh my God, you must be like Superwoman. And I'm like, absolutely not. And so I would start like giving pieces here and there, and people would be amazed. And I thought, you know what? There's a bigger story here that needs to be shared, because I'm not special. Trust me, I flip out at some of the smallest things. But in this particular way the story unfolded, it kind of wrote itself. So it's really that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. So tell us the story. You have kids, and you have a husband, and then you have the diagnosis. What was that like, and what did you find out?
You know, here's the strange thing. So my husband and I got married late into the relationship. So, you know, I'm a preacher's kid. And so we were shacking. I'm just going to tell the truth. But I was never comfortable with that for many reasons. And I kind of talked about it in the book, why I didn't want to get married. And I was kind of hesitant. So we got married 4 months into it. He starts to have these problems, and I know him very well. By that time, I had known him already 10 years. And so we had a almost 2-year-old at the time, and had a 14-year-old, and he had a 16-year-old. So we had kids. We were in flux, and I, you know, and to think back on it, even when we got married, he was like, don't put me on your insurance. I have my own. And I was just like, you know, it doesn't cost me anymore. It makes sense. It's easier, you know. And looking back, I'm so glad I did. So it was a crazy time. We were blending families. He was living across town, you know, prior. And so it was the exciting part, right? Because finally we've made the leap. grown adults, we've made the leap. My mom was happy, like, oh, thank God she's not going to hell, because she was checking. So it was an exciting time. Like, and I finally felt like, okay, I'm a grown up now. You know, I'm somebody's wife. Yeah.
So what was he like during this time? So all of a sudden, okay, boom. Like you say, finally you do it. You make other people happy. And then you get this diagnosis. And anytime anyone's dealing with cancer or any diagnosis in any realm of it, of course, the panic sets in about, I can't do this. I'm going to die. It's awful. And what did you do to pick that whole situation up?
You know, and not to give away too much in the book, but I do talk about in the book prior my experience with my dad. So my dad passed away from cancer, a different type, but nonetheless a cancer. And it wasn't until my husband got diagnosed that I could kind of put together the pieces and it all made sense to me, because I watched my mom be a wife to my dad with a diagnosis. And I talk about that. But for me, it was instantaneously, okay, we have to accept this information, and I'm the person to write down all the specifics. We're going to be compliant, but this is not how it ends. And he, on the other hand, was just like, I'm damned if I do, and I'm damned if I don't. If I don't finish these appointments, I know something's wrong, right? And the more appointments he was just like, they can't figure it out, the more anxious he became. And for me, I was just thinking, I hope they find out soon, because right away we didn't know. It took a point of discovery. So with every week and me being in healthcare, I knew, like, okay, this process of elimination, I wish it was faster. But at this point, I'm like, this is too much. What we thought was going to be a simple, like, you sprained your back, turned into you have multiple myeloma.
Wow. And so we don't want to give everything away, like you said, but you have kids. How do you deal with that? Because you've got the blended family. Kids would absolutely be nervous and worried. And what do you tell them? How do you deal with that? And that's a big piece of this.
It was huge. So, you know, my husband's very direct. He wanted to sit them down and tell them, you know, my eyebrows are going to go. And I'm thinking, don't do that. You know, we had to have this pre-conversation. I'm like, you don't know. Like, no, we need to tell them, you know, age appropriately, because some, we had various ages, teenagers, you know, not. And I said, no, we're not going to do that. What we're going to tell them, you know, is that you're going to be having a lot of doctor's appointments. You know, the doctors have found, you know, something wrong with your back. Because at this point, I didn't want their life to be disrupted. Ours was already disrupted. And for me, I knew, even though I was older when my father was diagnosed, I knew that we needed something to just remain. We couldn't let the ground fall out from under them. And I needed them to focus on homework. I needed them to get scholarships. I needed them out the house. So I'm like, oh, no. We can't have, you know, all eyes on us. You know, it's already a big deal, right? And I didn't need the kids day in and day out. So we kind of gave it to them in bits and pieces until we were really certain and until our life changed. Because I'm telling them, we don't know. There was so little information. I said, we don't know. We don't want to just drop this on them the way it hit us. And I think it was that mama bear mode, like protecting them. Like, oh no, we're not doing this. We're not going to tell them all these dramatic things that may not even occur, which I'm glad we didn't, because it didn't happen that way.
Yeah, thank goodness. So let's have you hold the copy of the book up again.
Yes.
Proud mama, this book, Keep Your Kleenex from Diagnosis to Deliverance. That's Natasha's book, right? And it is, of course, marketed by Pitch Media. So it's an exciting time for you to do the book. Does it feel good to have the book, you know, there, you've done it, you've gone? Because people talk about books and you know you can help people, but then you just don't get to it. You're busy. You're a mom. You have a great job. I mean, look, you have a PhD, so you've gone deeper into your career. So there's lots of reasons that you could push it off or just not get to it. Does it feel good to have accomplished that?
It feels good. It is a little alarming because I'm from the keep everything that going in this house, My parents grew up and I feel like I just broke the rules. So it was one of those things when I was like, oh my God, did I say too much? And I think that probably was the hardest for me. The writing itself, that came easy. Because most of my thoughts, I'm very, you know, in tune with me. But once I hit the button and I started reading back and forth, I'm like, is this too personal? Where are the boundaries? How much do I want to say? And of course, I had to relive some very tough moments. And it was very real for me, cathartic, but also real. So the hard part was like, oh my God, strangers are going to know my business. So that means I told the truth, but that vulnerability means I gave an honest story, right? I didn't change it in any way because that nervous energy every time I'm like, oh, people know our business. I was like, I'm sorry, mom. I told my sisters, I don't know. But it feels good because, you know, the early feedback I'm getting is exactly what it was supposed to do, is doing what it's supposed to do.
And so along those same lines, what do you hope people take away from reading your book?
I really want them to understand it's not a steps. You know, we have how-to books. This is not it. You have people trying to motivate you past, you know, difficult. It's not it. It's really what I did incrementally every day, from the smallest of tasks to, you know, how did I get 10 years past the diagnosis? And really, it's letting you know that it's not science or it's not magic. It is intentional. It is deliberate. It is controlling what I can control. And it's a little different because I'm not telling you take these steps, do this, read this, and then come back and then write a journal and then write this down and repeat this mantra. I'm really not. I'm giving you what I still do, even some of the things currently, because he still, you know, has this diagnosis. It's not going anywhere. So it is real life, applicable, real time, you know, advice and what I know works.
Do you think it's helped him? I mean, when, you know, by going through the process and you putting it in a book and knowing that his story, your story could really help other people?
I think it has. I think it's been cathartic for him as well. He's very internal, introvert, different from me. you know, getting information from him, pulling from him, even, you know, I said, you know, read the draft, of course, you want me to take this out, you know, kind of, and, you know, he said it's good, he, very few words, but I can tell internally, he is like stepping outside of our situation and seeing it, right, in hindsight and kind of watching a movie like, you know, that did happen, and I think it's helpful for him. I think it's allowing him to be more conversational about it as well.
Keep your Kleenex from diagnosis to deliverance.
Yes, and there's photos in there, so you get to see my husband and the kids, and, you know, there's some good stuff in there. So yeah. I'm really excited, really excited.
Yeah, and you'll be able to get it wherever good books are sold. Of course, we know that all this familiar places.
Anywhere. You can walk into your local bookstore. If it's not there, you can go to the register, and they'll be able to type it in and get it sent to you.
Natasha, what a wonderful smile, what a wonderful inspirational story. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Have a great one.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
My name is Milan Vukovic. 10 years ago, I got frustrated with the quality of Pau D'Arco tea sold in the stores. So, I founded the Pau D'Arco Tea Club that now ships our super tea to over 100 countries. You too can order or get info about the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea at www.drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. Why settle for less when you can order original Pure Pau D'Arco and drink Super Tea for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping? Each pound makes 300 cups, which is the equivalent of 12 cents per cup for the original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea. Order now at www.drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com. Or by calling 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. Or by calling 818-965-9113.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you, so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
Glenn Cook, he's written a book called Rules for Rulers Who Do Not Know the Rules. So again, I'm going to say that. Rules for Rulers Who Do Not Know the Rules. Glenn, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
Let's talk about why you wrote the book. What prompted you to say, you know, I'm going to put this together?
I was in the second class when TSA was created at Fort Lauderdale Airport. And after about a year, they decided to do some promotions. And the promotions boiled down to who was the most popular. And a lot of the people were looking for a pay raise, but weren't looking for the job. I'm retired, but I did security for 40 years. And after they did the promotion, I wrote a page down of 10 sentences for newly promoted people. And time went on, it became 20 sentences, and then it got to be 50 sentences. And two managers came by and asked me for a copy of it. And that was in 2004, and I just kept on adding things. And finally, about 2006, I thought I'd better organize it. And I organized it out and just kept on adding to it. And I'm an old dog with a military background, a security background. And it ended up being the book you see.
Yeah, and in your book, let me stop you there for a second so that we get to some of the really cool things in it. You know, you talk about all kinds of things, and setting us up that way was perfect about what your background was. You talk about dress codes and uniforms when you talk about work. You talk about flattery. You talk about computer records, problems, decisions, incompetence, like they're mentioning, promotion, scheduling, education. So much of what you saw is what you're putting in this book, because it's what happens in our life. You even have a section called Life and Quality of Life. So yes, this is your observations, and you look at it, and if we go into the life section, for example, quality of life, what do you talk about in quality of life? How do we have a quality of life?
Quality of life, how things are scheduled, what are you doing for your life? So they eat too many agencies, too many companies, the employee is viewed as a cog in a machine, and that's where it stops. They don't realize that there's other things that the employee does. I can't count the number of times over the years where I've seen somebody who was a cog in the machine, and all of a sudden they leave. Well, why did he leave? Oh, you didn't know he was going to nursing school? No. That sort of information doesn't get asked, and it doesn't get passed down. And when they're doing promotions, you want to make sure that the person you're promoting has the necessary drive in the field that they're at. Otherwise, they're getting promoted, but they're not going to be the best interest of the company, so to speak.
Yeah. And speaking of that with the company, you have thoughts on leading versus managing, which is huge. People talk about that so often nowadays, but even, you know, decades ago. So what do you think with leading versus managing? What's the difference?
A manager will never accept responsibility for a decision made by his staff. A leader always accepts responsibility. A failure in a manager can be bad news. A failure in a leader is catastrophic. Imagine you're in charge of a fire team, and if the guy who's leading the team gets taken out, the next person in line better be able to fill it. If a manager gets taken out, hopefully somebody on the staff will be able to step in and fill a hole. But if the manager has not trained anybody under him to fill that hole, it's going to be bad news.
Because then they're stuck, right? Then you're stuck with you don't have someone to fill in that gap.
You don't have someone to make decisions.
Yeah.
Decision-making, I have found, is one of the things that separates leaders and managers on a big scale. And there is an old saw to if you do the wrong thing, eventually it will lead you to finding the right thing. And that finding the right thing is what you want to do. The quicker you find it, the safer you are.
Boy, isn't that true. The name of the book is Rules for Rulers Who Do Not Know the Rules. We're speaking with Glenn Cook here on Author's Corner as part of America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney. And you can get this book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Another section you talk about that right in the beginning that I found so interesting, your interests. And you talk about best interests. You talk about weather you mix in, emergencies and safety. And you talk about insurance. Tell us about insurance.
Insurance, everybody thinks in terms of a financial thing. But insurance in leadership is making sure that if something goes wrong, you've got a fallback. You've got something that you can go to immediately as the next step to protect you. Okay?
Yeah. Yep, that makes sense. And another thing that you talk about that I think sometimes, and especially in these days where we're talking about work weeks and how people work and the disappearance of 9 to 5 and all of that, and then people accruing vacation time and not taking it or taking too much of it, travel and vacations, what were your thoughts on that?
If you're going to go outside the country, learn what the social norms are. One of the things I was blessed with when I was overseas was the ability to go native. At times, I was really thankful, but I had a couple of wake-up calls. I was in a bar in Angola, and I was playing a dice game with the bar owner, and he looked at me and he says, "You're an American." I said, "Yeah." He says, "You need to get out of here." And I said, "Why?" And bar owner said, "Look around." They had a picture of Lenin. They had a picture of Castro, Mao, Khrushchev, Stalin, all these various communist leaders. And it was the local hangout for communist Cuban mercenaries. And an American would be about as welcome among that bunch.
For sure. That was a good warning, absolutely. When people read your book, what do you hope they take away from reading the book?
I hope that they use it as a guide to avoid problems, to think outside the box. My daughter was in college, and I have a high IQ, and her professor said she'd like to meet me and talk to me because I think outside the box a lot. And my daughter said no, and the professor said, "Why?" She says, "First, you got to figure out what planet the box is on." And so being able to think outside the box is absolutely crucial in certain higher positions. And we don't teach, it's not something that you can go to a school and teach, but it is something that you can learn over time. Okay?
Yeah, and that's what this book is filled with. You had a naval career, you studied network operations, you did ballroom dancing. I mean, you have lived life. You got 2 college degrees, 10 ranks of black belt. I mean, just on and on and on. And you share all that wisdom in this book. And there are absolutely some really interesting things that you can learn from it. Rules for Rulers Who Do Not Know the Rules. Glenn Cook, thank you for hanging out with us and coming on.
My pleasure. If you ever get a problem, send me an email.
I will. Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pouty Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. Drinksupertea.com.